Well, I love having guests that have been successful in whatever they've started off during in their career and then go on to have another successful career afterwards. And today's guest has done exactly that. She's been a professional footballer in America, and then she's gone on and started her own business. I think you're going to really enjoy this, so let's get into it. Hi, everyone, and welcome back, or welcome to The Psychology of Success. I'm Paul McVeigh. And if you're joining us for the first time today, I'd just like to say a huge welcome, because I know there are lots of top quality podcasts that you could listen to, and I just really appreciate you giving us some of your precious time today. And I'm delighted to introduce my guest, because Yael Averbuch-West is an international footballer for the United States of America and is also the founder of Technofootball, which has revolutionized the way kids can improve and practice their game across the world. So Yael, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited for the conversation.
Good. Well, brilliant. Listen, thanks very much for joining us. And firstly, where in the world are you?
I am in New Jersey in the US, if you can't tell by my accent.
Fantastic. Well, listen, we've had a couple of people come across from America on the show already. So delighted that we've had someone from the NFL, Jay Fiedler, and now we've got yourself in being in New Jersey. So Yael, brilliant. Really appreciate you joining us. And of course, we've known each other for a number of years now when we met when you were playing for Kansas City, which we will come on to in a little while. But I want to kick off the way I ask everybody on that's come on the show. As my first question for you, Yael, is what is the definition of success?
Yeah, so I think that when I think about success, I think about having a purpose that you're able to work towards every day. So I think I used to define success actually as like having achieved that purpose or that goal, but I actually think working towards it every day is a measure of success in and of itself.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's a really good starting point. And I think that's one of the reasons why I asked this question, because it really gets people, especially, you know, really high achieving people like yourself. I've had, you know, really fortunate to speak to Olympians, rugby players, you know, successful business leaders, and everybody comes at it from a different angle. And so I'm guessing what you're referring to there is more to do with your football and your soccer that you were playing for 15 years and whether you were achieving your goals in that.
Yeah, you know, I think in everything I've done, you know, as a footballer and as an entrepreneur now, I realize more and more that there's never this end point. Like you think, oh, the goal is to sign a professional contract when you're young and you're growing up and you're training. And then you do, and you don't feel successful. You feel like, okay, now's the start of another journey. And then the goal is to, you know, represent your country and get your first cap. And then if you're really fortunate, you get to do that. And I know for myself, then I felt like, okay, well, now's the start of another journey. Now I want to be a starter on the team. I want to solidify my spot. So for me, I really changed my definition of success over the years, because on paper, I did have a lot of success, but I never felt satisfied. I never felt like, okay, I'm successful. I always wanted more. So I think that's where my definition and how I think of it comes from.
And do you think that is just a trait that people who, whether you call them successful, people who are high achievers, people who probably just do things that, you know, a tiny percentage of the world's population can do. Do you think that's something that's common across all you high achievers?
I mean, I would venture to guess that the people who do feel satisfied when they've achieved that first milestone, we probably don't know of them. I think it's a pretty common mentality. I know a lot of my teammates over the years, I'm sure you can relate to this as well, had that mentality of always striving to get better, because the second you stop, someone else is going to have that mentality and pass you by. So I think some people call it grit. It goes into longevity. It's a constant improvement. That's what kind of solidifies people and the names, you know, in all different fields who are considered successful, I think are constant works in progress in their own mind.
Well, let me ask you this, Enya, where do you think that came from? Because as you just mentioned, there are some people who do achieve something, whatever that happens to be, and are happy and satisfied, or just don't go on for whatever reason. But why do you think you had it, or where do you think that influence came from?
You know, I had a really strong influence from my parents growing up, and both of them were long distance runners. So automatically you think of, you know, the discipline that goes into that. You got to be a little bit like crazy to do that sport, I think. But, you know, from when I was a young kid, what I saw was that they were no longer competing. Both of them used to be competitive runners. My dad, you know, was Olympic trial level runner, but they were still doing their workout every single day. So I woke up and they had done their workout, they had showered, and I never heard them one time say like, oh, I didn't feel well today, the weather's bad. There was no question. They were going to do a workout, whether it was in the house, jumping rope or some type of substitute, whatever it was. So for me, it was kind of, I took for granted that if you're an athlete, if you're a musician, whatever it is you do that every day, you attend to it and you try to get a little bit better. So I think I thought that was normal growing up. Now I realize how weird it was in my household. That's not everybody's household and what they see at the moment.
But that seems like that is just an incredible grounding, you know, and it's funny because you're talking about running, and obviously as we were both playing football, you do a lot of running in the sport day to day. But actually, since I've stopped playing professionally, I actually really enjoy just running for the sake of running and that enjoyment. But I also know how hard it is, whether it's 10K, half a marathon, a marathon. So what kind of distances were your parents doing? And then why do you think that was so influential in terms of just seeing it? Because that doesn't mean you have to do what they were doing.
Yeah, so my dad was a competitive marathoner, and both my parents ran a number of marathons, but they would, and I don't know how much they were doing at the time, but they would, you know, they would go for a light training run in something like, 10 miler or something. And so, for me, it wasn't so much that I was going to do the same thing, because obviously as a kid, I'm not going to go out and run that kind of distance, but I think it's the methodical approach. The idea that, okay, if you're going to race at a certain distance, well, then you break it down, and some days you do more of the speed work, other days you do a longer run to prepare for the race. And it was kind of the thought process behind it. They had their days planned out. So maybe Wednesday was the recovery day where you go to the local gym and swim laps in the pool. And it was planned. They lifted weights, they did yoga and stretching to recover. And all of this I thought was normal, but I didn't realize that what they had gone into it. You know, they had actually planned out the calendar and stuck to it for a matter of 20, 30, 40 plus years. And kind of that effect on who they are as people and who they are as athletes.
And so why do you think that you didn't go down the kind of running track athletics route, as opposed to you obviously went down the football route and became incredibly successful? Where did that happen, or what point in your life did become a big part for you?
So my parents, neither of them knew anything about football or soccer, as we were calling it at the time. And I think that whatever it was I had started in a more organized way, I probably was going to be very serious about. I think about my personality now, and if it had been a musical instrument, if it had been a different sport, I probably was going to be serious. And I never, because the running my parents did wasn't really appropriate for a kid, and it's not a fun thing for a kid to do, a long run. I never really got into it. You know, we would do some road races for fun, like the 1 mile fun run and things like that when I was younger. So I enjoyed being outside. I enjoyed the process of running and trying to get a better time, but I was never going to compete in that at the age I was. And then my friend in school played football. And so I was interested, I signed up, and right from the start, because it's just my personality, my dad took me to my first ever practice, and we were already asking questions, like, okay, what kind of gear do I need to buy? What do you do with these long socks? What kind of skills do I need to learn? So from the start, because of just how my parents are, I think we were on this exploration process. Like, you know, it's very different here in America. Not everybody knows the sport and watches it all the time. So it was very hard. We didn't have any football on TV to watch. We didn't know anything about it. So we were looking for ways, okay, if I'm going to do this, well, I have to learn what are the things I should be practicing? What positions are on the field? Like, all the basics we had to figure out.
Yeah, that's actually just seems so strange to me, because, you know, I can't imagine not knowing what, you know, the best players in the world look like whenever I was a kid, because I was watching it on TV every week, really fortunate. Like you say, you weren't sure about the entire game, but clearly went and started enjoying it. And I'm almost thinking I should ask this question at the end of the show, but I am going to ask it now before we even get into, you know, telling the listeners about just how well you did in your career. But if you didn't do soccer, and maybe, as you said, a musical instrument or another sport altogether, do you think you still would have reached to the same levels, given that you've kind of talking about how It's just you and your personality, that whatever that is, allowed you to have the success in your life?
Wow, that is a good question. I think it's really hard to say, because for me, when I think about my journey as a footballer, I think about a couple of things. I do think that whatever I decided to really throw myself into, I would have attained a certain level of success. And, you know, again, that goes into the definition of what did that word actually mean? But I think I would have reached a pretty high level of performance in whatever field it was. I don't know if I have some natural abilities that in football or athletically, coordination wise, that made it easier for me to progress quicker and made it more fun to do that kind of practice that I was doing. I was going out and practicing on my own at a pretty young age. I was pretty serious, but it's hard to say kind of how that cycle works, because I do think there's an aspect of a natural inclination that makes something more fun for a young kid. And football was really fun for me because I think I felt good at it and I felt like I was getting better. So it's possible if I had picked another discipline that I didn't have that feeling of success or being really competent and good at it and it was hard to get better, that maybe I wouldn't have progressed as far. But I kind of believe that I would have found something that I felt like I was pretty good at, enough so to pursue very seriously, and would have gone down that route. So it's a great question. I think it depends on what it was. I can tell you probably if it was a musical instrument, I might not have, because I do not have enough information to that. But maybe that would have never been my thing, you know? Like maybe I would have picked something else.
It's a really good point. But then, you know, I might argue that just because knowing your personality, that if you did pick a musical instrument, you probably would have been very good, because you would have put the same dedication and time into it.
You've never heard me.
It is interesting. Okay, that is true. I think that's a really good kind of setting, and almost like setting the scene for what we're going to discuss here, because you sound like, you know, you had almost the ability, the enjoyment, you had some passion for football. Yeah, I think, are you nearly 6 foot as well, Yael? Because you were a centre half when you played, so I think you're quite tall and lean. So do you think all of these attributes and traits that you had just made it, whether it's easier for you to progress and be successful in football?
For sure. I think, you know, I was set up where the effort I put in was paying off. So it was a nice, I got good feedback. And naturally, I have some athletic inclination. I was never, you know, the highest level, the fastest or strongest or anything like that. But for a young kid, I picked things up pretty quickly athletically. I was, you know, at a certain point, I started to be a taller, bigger player, which gave me some advantages. But I think really the natural inclination or the natural aspect that I notice now, I think played the biggest part, was my ability to not get bored and to feel excited about doing the same things every day. And to stick with it. And I think there is a natural aspect to that, to have the focus and the interest day in and day out. That's not normal for everyone, especially not at, you know, the younger ages, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids. It's not normal to have that focus.
You're listening to the Psychology of Success podcast with Paul McVeigh, sponsored by Moment Digital Limited, live streaming and video producers creating live event content that looks like TV shows, broadcast quality without the cost. Check us out at moment-digital.co.uk.
Now, Yael, you're talking about how you've kind of developed this passion, this kind of love, and also this ability to repeat things over and over, which of course is what we know allows people to get to that mastery level. When did things start becoming a bit more serious for you when it arrived to football, maybe in your teen years or coming up to college?
So when I was, my mentality about it was pretty serious very early on, to the point where I think some other parents and coaches were kind of like, oh, is this okay? And I know my parents would always get questions like, don't you want to have her play other sports and stuff? And I never wanted to. So I don't know what it looked like from the outside, but it probably looked like some, you know, it wasn't healthy for me. But I was very serious in the sense that I decided I wanted to be a professional soccer player, footballer. And I didn't know what that meant, but I said it. And then I was on this mission to figure out what that means, what it looks like, and what I had to do to achieve it. Because I wasn't just kind of write it down on this paper, you know, when you get asked in grade school, what do you want to be when you grow up? I was determined that it wasn't just going to be something I said. This was going to be true for me. And around the time I was 13 and 14, I played as the only girl on an all-boys team. And I think that's when it became really serious for me, because that was no longer comfortable. And it was no longer, if I'm being honest, that fun. It was a means to an end to get better, because I knew that that was going to challenge me. And so I was doing something very uncomfortable for me at the time, with the intention of reaching this goal. And so I think that's when I started to make a lot of decisions that I realized might not be easy, might not be comfortable, but they were going to help me do something I wanted to do. And for that reason, I wanted to do them still, but I wasn't showing up with all my friends and just doing the easy thing.
Yeah. See, this is really fascinating, because I was the complete opposite. I think I was just playing football with my friends, whether it was in the street, school team, or from a local, you know, boys club. And it was just for fun. I don't think I ever really thought I definitely want to do it. And these are kind of some of the steps. So it's really interesting to hear how you decided not only that you wanted to be a professional, but that you were going to start putting things in place in your life to make that happen.
Well, to be honest, I think I had to, because what I hear, you know, from your journey is I wish I had that. I think that's a much more natural way to end up there. But there was no environment like that for me. There was no high level. I couldn't just go out and play with girls my age. And I wasn't going to, it wasn't going to be fun for me, because they weren't that good, to be honest, the local players. They were okay, but I was progressing more quickly because I wanted to play more. So I was doing a lot. I was playing more. I was taking my ball out in my backyard and playing more. So that's fun for me anymore. And just the nature of how football was in America at the time, you probably were not going to end up at a high level by accident, because even, for example, while you were saying watching great players all the time, we had to do something. My dad called and got some Italian football channel for our TV. So we were watching all in Italian. We had no idea who the teams were. We didn't know what was going on. But that was the only way I could watch football. There was no other way for me to watch. And so that was the first games I ever watched, was this Italian channel my dad got on the television. But just, you know, things like that. There was no way I was going to see what it looked like to play the game well and play with really great players enough to get to a high level just naturally in the environment like you described.
It is funny you're saying that, because it's almost the way you're describing that says like you're talking about the 1950s or 60s, but this must be late 1990s, early 2000s. When you're amazing. So, and why I also wanted to compare, why I mentioned Jay Fiedler earlier, is because, you know, for someone who was a quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys in the NFL, and I'm asking him, you know, but like thinking what you were saying, that he worked hard at it, he had this desire, had this goal, went and, you know, made it happen, but an incredibly competitive sport. But he didn't have that. He almost said he went to one of the Ivy League colleges and just kind of stumbled into football, obviously American football we call it, and just went on, and because he had certain talents, went and did really well. But you seem like you're the complete opposite end of the spectrum, where you're saying, I wanted to do it, I put things in place, made it happen. But then, of course, you must have seen the progress, and then you got to college, and I'm guessing you must have stood out like a sore thumb.
Well, you know, where I went to play in college at University of North Carolina, there were some of the best players probably in the world at the time, actually, playing in college. So I was in college, I became part of a program where everybody had my same goal, and everybody was, you know, at the top of their game for our age and, you know, where we were. So I did establish myself as one of the best college players, but it wasn't because I was so unique in my team environment. It's because I was on a wonderful team that was pushing me to be even better and to even raise my standards. There were things that I didn't even know players could do, and I saw my teammates doing them, and I was learning that way. But, you know, to what you said before about kind of the difference of, you know, having this goal and purposely trying to achieve success versus realizing point, oh wow, you know, I can keep taking this further. I do think that there are some differences with American football in particular and football, because there are so many different skill sets in football that can make you good. Whereas in American football, there are, but if you're an amazing athlete, you can kind of come onto it later. I think that the reality is for many disciplines, you have to, in some way or another, put in many, many hours at your craft. So if that's because you're purposeful, like I was, and I was going out and keeping track of my records and crossing them out and writing down when I did better and things like that, that's one way. And there's also the way to just go out and play a lot. You can play on good teams, you can have good coaches, you can just keep playing over time and naturally getting better in all those environments, whether it's free play, like pickup football in the street, or, you know, playing for a more elite team, or even not, whatever it is, you have to accrue that time. So if it's just fun and you're doing it a lot, you can get really good and realize later that you're really good and then fine tune things. But there's no way, I believe, in the game of football to get to the highest level unless you've put in tons and tons of time with the ball at your feet and playing with it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Absolutely. And this, going back to what you said before, very kindly said, I asked a great question and you are the first person that's ever said this on the podcast, but I think I'm now going to ask a difficult question. So when you were around the college years and you were coming out and obviously you wanted to go and have a professional career, how confident were you that you would?
You know, it's weird because I think back now that my mindset didn't really make sense, but I was sure I would be a professional player. Not in an arrogant way, because I wasn't at all. I was actually very, I always thought I needed to be better at things. I saw other players doing things and I wanted to be faster. I wanted to be stronger. I wanted to be better in the air because I was tall. There were all these things I wanted to get better at, but I knew that I would play professionally. I never had a backup plan. I knew I had taken the steps to understand the level and make sure that I could be at that level. And for me, it was a matter of, you know, if for some reason there was not an opportunity to play in the U.S., I would have gone overseas and found a team to play for there. So it was not would I or would I not. It was more what would the experience look like and how would I make it happen, I think, which isn't really a normal mindset now that I think of it, because it's not, you know, it's not that I was taking it for granted, but it's not guaranteed. There was nothing guaranteed about it, but I was very sure that that was my next step.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, because I think, again, we seem to have amazing the amount of common ground we have, Yael, but also so different in so many ways. Because I think when I first got my first year professional contract, and I was only a 1 year contract, and I was the lowest paid player at Tottenham Hotspur at the time, I was the opposite. I was not confident that I would have a professional career. In fact, I just probably didn't believe in myself enough for whatever reason that was, but I definitely didn't have that. And you talk about, you know, you definitely wanted to, you were going to have it somewhere around the world. And did football then take you around the world before you finally settled in America again?
Absolutely, it did. And not because this is where I think I had this clear image of what my path was going to be like. Okay, here's what you need to do professionally. And to speak to what you said, a little bit of the difference, you know, it was different in America for women at the time. There weren't that many opportunities to play professionally. So we all kind of knew the top players. It's not like, you know, the Premier League where there's so many players. It's so competitive to get the top. It was very competitive, but at the same time, coming out of college, I knew who the best players were, who were in my age range. I knew who was already kind of playing professionally. And so it was a lot smaller of a pool of players, I think. But this is where my plan and my vision kind of, I had none anymore. I knew, okay, I'm a professional player. And I had to think a lot about, well, what now? Because I didn't realize, you know, there was a league I played in for 3 years and then the league folded. So there was no other opportunity to play professionally in the US. And I never had thought of a plan in case that happened, or I didn't really plan where would I go, please, what countries. So at that point, I ended up playing overseas in Russia and for a little bit in Russia, and then for a while in Sweden, which was great. And then I came back to the US for a little. I had some other experiences. I played in Cyprus for a bit for a team in Champions League. I actually kind of guest played for Arsenal ladies for a bit. So I had these other experiences, but as a kid and growing up, this, it wasn't part of my vision. I had no vision once I played. I didn't even know what it looked like to play professionally, really, in the U.S. for a woman. So I did get to travel around the world, but this is where it became like this serious adventure. Just things kept coming up and I never knew what to expect.
And you keep mentioning this about how, you know, probably lack of opportunities, and it looks like we'll touch on that in terms of, you know, the association, the Players Association that you founded later on in your career. But you're talking about the lack of opportunities, maybe the standard of women's football, which from someone on the outside looking in, yeah, it doesn't really almost sound what my impression is, because clearly, you know, world champions, numerous world champions of in terms of the ladies' football, and you're thinking, well, if there weren't a lot of opportunities, but yous are world champions, something there is almost like a bit of a disconnect.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I do feel like there were a lot of opportunities. I had wonderful opportunities growing up to play with other elite up-and-coming girls within my state. If I would travel a little bit to play amazing coaches from all over the world where I grew up. I grew up in a suburb of New York City. So there were people from all over the world I learned the game from. I had opportunities to go to a number of different colleges and then to play professionally at a number of different clubs. But I still think, so with all of that, I feel like I had all the opportunities I needed or wanted growing up and through my career. What is interesting, though, is compared to the infrastructure in some other places in the men's game, it's so little. So I think if you look at, you know, what the big picture opportunity is to play men's football in Europe, there's at the top this huge opportunity, and it's so competitive to get there. And I think that's what's different about the women's game in the U.S. It's still young and it's still new in the sense that we have the best women's team in the world, but to play professionally in our country is still kind of a small group of players with not that much reward at the end of the rainbow sense.
Yeah, no, and that does make sense, and I do appreciate that. And so I suppose one of the things that I keep getting messages on social media from, you know, people who are kindly getting in touch after they've listened to the podcast is a lot to do with people who come on are clearly very successful. They've had amazing careers, and generally they've gone on very similar to yourself. They've had another successful second career after their sporting career. And people kind of listen to think it's all well and good for that person because it seems like their life has been this upward trajectory. And I suppose a lot of the things that you're saying, apart from, you know, the league folding, which obviously it's very difficult to legislate for, but seems like a lot of things have gone your way all through your career, but there must have been some difficult times for you during your playing times.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because I think it's a really important point you brought up. When I talk about my career or when I see it in bullet points and in a bio, it looks like that very much. But that's never how I felt about it because I cared so much about what I was doing that little things, which seem like little things that don't even make my life story really, if I'm to give you a summary, really impacted me. So, you know, as a youth player, I was cut from teams. I was told at one point when I was part of a youth national team that I wasn't athletic enough to play at the highest level. So kind of like, it wasn't said like this, but kind of like, okay, you don't really have a chance here. And I cried and I cried and I was working so hard at this. That was basically like saying, like, you just wasted all this time. And, you know, I was not always a starting player. I sat on the bench many times. I came on as a sub and tried to solidify my spot throughout many of my teams. So I never felt like I didn't have any, you know, I was very fortunate to stay pretty healthy through my career. So I didn't have any horrible injuries or anything like that. But I never felt like I was the star player. I had it easier. I was, you know, doing as well as maybe I should be doing for the work I was putting in. So my constant struggle through my career was I was working so hard and I was achieving. You know, I was achieving all these things on paper, but I never felt great about my role in my teams. I never was the player who I aspired to be in my mind. So I always had this internal battle of feeling pretty disappointed in myself, if I'm being really honest. And this is right till the end. This is lasting, like, I don't think I had one game as a professional player that I felt good about overall. And maybe this was, you know, I need to lower my standards, but that was the reality of how I felt. I had huge ups and downs where I was really depressed about my performance. I had horrible anxiety before games because I was putting so much pressure on myself. So I think that what happened on paper and what you can look at that maybe looks like the suspension internally was like a lot of turmoil. It was these ups and downs. It never felt easy. It never felt like this.
Yeah, that is so brutally honest, Yael, from what you've said, and almost incredible as well that, you know, from your nearly 15-year playing career, and you're saying that you virtually never had one game where you came away and thought, yeah, I was either content or happy with my performance. There was always something that maybe you could critique in yourself, and that is something I think is really important for anyone who's listening, just to realize that you can easily look up at someone and say, oh, they're a professional, this, or they're a millionaire, or they're doing whatever they're doing in their life and thinking, wow, their life must be amazing. And yet you've just said how so many girls around America all probably wanted to be professional footballers and have grown up over the years, wanted to do what you did. And yet a lot of them, I bet, will not realize just how difficult it is and the downsides that go along with it.
Oh, certainly. And I think that, you know, in the little bit of experience I've had meeting some really, really well-known people, and you know, I'm even just thinking about the players, the American women players who, you know, everyone knows, the Alex Morgan, the Megan Rapinoe, and you know, some of the male players, is that you can look at something on paper, you can look at someone's life from the outside, especially with social media, and nobody is exempt from the feelings of, you know, the anxiety that goes along with performance, the upheaval to move your life if you have to go play for another team, all of the little things that go, you know, you know, we talk a lot now, there's a lot more awareness about mental health. Everybody deals with these things. It doesn't matter how much money you have, what level you reach as a player, how famous you are. Everybody deals with the same human problems. Everyone's human. So I think that's what, you know, that's what I try to tell young players, is the things that you're going through, coming back from an injury, being cut from a team, not liking your coach, it doesn't change. The players you watch on TV have the same exact experiences. It just looks a little different. And actually, sometimes it's worse because the pressure is heightened and you're being watched and that your performances mean so much more.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think we definitely agree with all of you've said there. And I do think that is, it's so important just to, so if anyone is listening, they might have a son or a daughter, to know that these things happen and it's so difficult to deal with at times. And I suppose what I was thinking, Yael, as you said, you had this anxiety, whether it was before practice or before games. Was there anything you can share that maybe how you dealt with that so that you were able to go out and perform at a high level?
So this is an area I wish I had had better support and better understanding that, one, what I was feeling was normal, but also, I think there are more resources now to help athletes, but anybody, deal with things like that, whether it's, you know, listening to an app to do a little bit of meditation, relaxation. So I did not have very good coping mechanisms. And what happened to me over time was that it kind of built up. So there were situations where certainly, you know, I would do things like I would try to laugh and take it easy with teammates. I was very low key before games. I would take a nap on game day and just try to stay as relaxed as possible. But outside of that, I had no actual practice to help myself with this. And I wish I did, because just like I was practicing and training so hard at all the skills necessary to compete physically, I wasn't practicing the mental skills necessary to compete. And this, I think, this is the hardest part of the game. Anybody can work on their running, work on their jumping, and go lift weights and strike the ball, practice their technique. But the mental part is a real puzzle that I think is very difficult to fine tune. And at the highest level, it's the real difference maker. And I did not, if I'm being totally honest, have great coping mechanisms or have great training to be able to perform well mentally.
Today's podcast is sponsored by CSS Investments, a London-based regulated stockbroker that offers a bespoke advisory investment service for stocks and shares. I've personally used CSS for over 5 years now and happily recommend their services. You can find out more at css-investments.com. But please do remember that, as with all investing, your capital is at risk. And Yael, you're talking about coping mechanisms, whether it's to do with anxiety before games, whether it's your critique of your own performance. And I suppose that's one thing that's hugely important for me in my life, because I've, you know, had this real passion for psychology or mental performance, and I've just loved every part of it, because I feel that every time I develop my mindset, it improves the quality of my life. So I really understand where you're coming from there. But it's not just the on-field part of the game that you've been involved in the States. You're also got involved in the Players Association. So it's the National Women's Soccer League Players Association. And did you found that and set that up?
Yes. You know, we talked about kind of how interesting it is, because the outside perspective is, you know, the US on the women's side is so ahead of the curve in some ways in the game. But there's some basic things that I think remind me all the time that football is still young here, and football on the women's side is still very young. And one example is that, you know, we had no players association, no players union, no representation for the players on the women's side who are playing professionally. And so myself and some other players at the time, who all of a sudden we were older, veteran professional players, it happened quickly. We decided, you know, we need a way to ask the league questions to get problems solved before they have to go on Twitter or whatever was happening. So I was involved in founding what's now the Players Union. It started off just as a text chain, honestly, where we had a couple of representatives from each team, but now, you know, it's a real union to represent the players.
That's amazing. I went from a WhatsApp group essentially to now a union that represents all professional players across America.
Essentially, and actually, if I'm being really honest, I say this sometimes, my only intention was really to start that. It was basically a WhatsApp group with a few representatives from each team to filter questions up to the league and then to get information out from the league to the players. So I thought when I did that, wow, I did a great job. We have this communication chain. I'm done. And little did I know, then there's a lot more steps.
So give us an example of some of the things that actually the union, the Players Association, does now and almost helps players with. Because from my side, the PFA, the Professional Footballers Association in England, has been, you know, incredible to me. I did my degree, that I studied my master's in it, and they funded all of that. You know, you get like kind of lump sum when you retire, and things that, you know, I would never even thought of whenever I was starting my career. And like you talk about, you didn't have access to. So what are some of the things that you do?
You know, it's funny you mentioned the PFA, because we have a few players in the league and players over time who have played in England, and they'll always give us feedback, you know, because we talk to the players all the time with the Players Association. They'll say, well, at the PFA, we have this. And I'm thinking, that's nice. But do you realize that organization is hundreds of years old and has slightly more funding than our beginning WhatsApp?
Yeah.
But that's essentially the goal, to support players in all parts of the process. So coming into the professional level as a rookie, what do you need to know? What support do you need? Helping players who have all kinds of questions or maybe dealing with issues during their active career, and then also with the transition out of the game, but also alongside the game. You know, can you be continuing your education, getting your coaching licenses while playing? Are there other things you want to pursue to be a get your strength and conditioning coaching licenses? Whatever it is that players want, our job with the Players Association is to support them in that, alongside working with the league to make sure that we, you know, continue to chip away at raising the standards for the players. So raising pay, raising standards associated with the facilities, the staff and supports the team. So everything involving and surrounding the player experience, there's still a lot of work to do on the women's side in general, but in the US to get it to what you think of when you think of in England or in Europe of a professional footballer and the life they live and how they're treated and what it's like to show up at training. There's still quite a discrepancy with the experience here, which should be expected. It's very new here. So we're trying to get to where you guys are.
Yeah, no. And it's interesting you talk about, you know, the differences in both unions and associations. But actually, I had an experience, and funny you talked earlier about how, you know, if you looked at what your career is in bullet points on paper, it's very different to the real life experience. And one of the times whenever I'd been released from Norwich City, so I was about 28, 29, something like that. And I actually would love to have played in America during my career. So I went to go to San Jose Earthquakes. So my good friend who had played with at Norwich was a guy called Darren Huckerby. And he was at San Jose Earthquakes and he did really well. You know, he got player of the year in his first year or newcomer of the year. So I went and had a couple of days almost on trial, just seeing whether they'd be interested in signing me. And the days that I was there, one of the guys who was sitting next to me in training, the next day just didn't turn up. And I said to Huxall, where's that guy gone? And he went, that's it, contract torn up, gone, that's it. And I thought, you can't do that. You can't just tear up somebody's, you can't just end someone's contract. Surely it's a legally binding contract. He went, no, in America, that's what happens. So it's clearly there's a lot of need for these things just to give people some security, because if you don't know where you're going to be from one day to the next, that's not a really good way to live.
Oh, for sure. And that's a huge thing that the union is fighting to ensure, is that you know, that's one example. Another example is that you can be traded just at any time. Like the teams can talk and can trade a player. So it's not, you don't have to be in on the conversation. Your agent doesn't have to be in on the conversation. You can just get a call and they'll say, oh, you got to move across the country. And so, you know, you talk about mental health of athletes and stuff, and the things that you don't see, you watch this player play on TV. Well, they could have been at another club a week ago and not wanted to have left and just been, you know, had to pick up and move. So things like that are obviously not in the best interest of the athletes. And that's one area that the Players Association is, you know, focused to help athletes with.
And so coming back to your career then, Yael, you obviously, you talked about going to Russia and having a little bit of time overseas. But then when you came back to the States, it seems like you really kind of solidified your career and really got established. Like, can you tell us a little bit how that worked for you and maybe some of the ups and downs that you had, whether it was in Washington or in Kansas?
Yeah, so I came back to the U.S. I was playing in Sweden at the time and I loved my experience. But I always, you know, my family, my friends, my boyfriend at the time, everyone was back in the U.S. And so I was eventually planning to come back to the U.S. But the real reason I did then was because I wanted to be seen more and solidify my spot with the U.S. national team. And so I came back to the U.S. with that intention. And ironically, shortly after my time and I came back, I was playing in Washington, D.C. area. The coach of the national team actually changed, and the new coach never invited me into camp. It just, you know, didn't favor me for whatever reason. So I actually never got another opportunity with the national team from that point on. So that was really difficult for me because I had made a lot of career decisions with that as the ultimate goal. And that was always my ultimate goal. So I had a lot of tension every single day I would show up. It wasn't good enough for me to just be a professional player and to try to represent my club. I felt that I was always falling short of that extra goal. But I ended up going to play in Kansas City, which is where I met you. And that was the best professional experience I had. I played there for 3 years, and unfortunately, after the third year, the club actually folded at the time. It ended up transferring to another city, but it changed. Ownership changed, coaches, everything changed. And that was really, really sad for me because that was the first club where I felt like I had a home. And I loved playing there. I loved the coaching staff. I loved the people. And so that was really kind of, those 3 years were wonderful. And that kind of was the end of my professional playing career in a lot of ways. I ended up having some health problems that I think it all just added up for me. And the moving again and everything was too much. And so my health really took me down. I played it one more season in Seattle, but I wasn't able to play. I played one game and my health was just really bad. I'm not secretive about it. I have an illness called ulcerative colitis, and so it's a digestive thing. I hope no one listening has any idea about it for your own sake, but it made it so hard for me to travel and play. It was too much. So that was my last season playing professionally.
Yeah, and that must have been really difficult for you because sounding like, you know, obviously I know you, I've known you for a number of years and seeing how you are, but also just listening to the passion and the drive and dedication you had towards your sport, that when you got to what you knew was the end of your playing career, that must have been really difficult for you.
You know, it's interesting because I think my body did for me what I was never going to be able to do. I couldn't play. I had no decision to make. I literally could not do it. And so I had no choice. And I was really, really sick at the time, to the point where my main focus was just, I need to get healthy enough to live a normal life, to go through a day and feel okay. And so it almost distracted me so much from, it wasn't that I could have played, but I decided not to. I had no focus even on playing. I just needed to feel good. And so it actually really helped me in a way to transition away from my only thing I ever thought of and my only goal ever was to play and be the best player possible. But it helped me to transition away from that. So that was no longer my focus.
And do you think that because, almost as you say, the decision was taken out of your hands, that mentally you could move on easier and almost that transition? Because of course we know, whether it's, you know, football in England, whether it's American football or basketball in the US, we know that athletes do struggle coming out, whether that's through bankruptcy, divorce, you know, other people, you know, being going to jail, etc. So the rates of people coming out and transitioning away from sport are actually relatively low.
Yeah, I would say it really helped my transition. I still, though, I mean, now when I go to do a workout, I feel really conflicted. I'm like, well, I'm not training for something. Why am I doing this? I don't enjoy just exercising to exercise. I want to have a goal. I want to be working to get better. I still feel a little bit of unfinished business on the field. I think that, and I probably would have felt like this forever. So I have to kind of remind myself that, but I think that I was still getting better as a player, and there were areas where I could have still got to a next level as a player. So to me, I had planned I would not step away until I felt like I couldn't get better anymore. A day probably never would have come. So it's still, I think, I don't know if I will ever totally be done with it mentally. And I'll always have a little bit of kind of trouble being normal. But in a lot of ways, I can feel now. In so many ways, I feel a relief from what I didn't even realize was so stressful and so much tension of always wondering where I'd have to live. Do I have to move to a new place to play for a new team? Looking at the clock at night and saying, am I going to bed early enough? Did I hydrate enough today? All those thoughts, I realize now how much they had built up and how unhealthy it was to always have those stresses and worries. And now I still take care of myself, but I can relax a little more while doing it.
Yeah, it sounds like that you definitely need to relax a little bit after all of those really disciplined years. And when you're looking back at your playing side of your career, because of course we want to talk about your new app, Technofootball, but when you look back at your playing side of your career, did you enjoy it?
That's a great question. I would have said, of course, yes. While I was playing, I love this. This is all I ever wanted to do. I did not enjoy being a professional player, if I'm being totally honest. And I only admitted this to myself very recently. I loved every point up until then. And I love the game. I love playing. If there's a group playing, I have this group of guys I play with when it's their off season, I play. It's basically my season now. We do a little small-sided, you know, five versus five games. And I love that. That to me is everything. So I love the game. I loved my career. The professional part, I didn't love. I did enjoy my teammates. There were aspects I certainly enjoyed. But if I look overall, I don't think I enjoyed it, if I'm being really honest.
You're listening to the Psychology of Success podcast with Paul McVeigh, sponsored by Moment Digital Limited, live streaming and video producers creating live event content that looks like TV shows, broadcast quality without the cost. Check us out at moment-digital.co.uk.
And Yael, this is what I want to spend the next 10 minutes or so discussing, because whenever I first came across you in Kansas, and I think I was delivering a session for some of the players at Kansas, and I met you, and my friend who introduced us said that, you know, you had an app. And I was thinking, wow, that is incredible. You're a professional player and you have this business on the side, because in my mind, and when I was playing, there was nothing else I either had the capacity to do or probably the ability to do. And the fact that you already had this business up and running while you were playing was just so impressive to me. So can you explain a little bit more about kind of where the idea came from and how you've made it grow?
Yeah, well, first of all, I didn't actually intend to really start a full business while I was playing. I needed to. I was always coaching and doing something on the side while I was playing professionally, because I actually wasn't making enough money quite often to live in the way I wanted. So it was a little bit of a necessity. But the idea here was, when I was younger, there were great resources out there to learn to be a top player. But it was, you know, my dad and I, I joked about us kind of figuring out about the game. We would go in these catalogs and order these VHS tapes. And we ordered some on the Corver method, and one actually that was from England called Soccer Star. And we had all these old tapes. And I learned amazing things I could practice. It was so fun. I would watch the moves. I'd list them. I'd check them off as I did them out in my backyard. And nowadays, you go on the internet, you go on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and there are so many things that players see about what it takes to be good. They see trick shots, they see freestyle, they see people doing all kinds of crazy things. So there's almost the same problem, is that there's a little bit of a lack of guidance of what do you actually do. Say you watch a game on TV and you see Alex Morgan and you're inspired. Well, what do you actually do on your own, or what do you need to know if you want to do that one day? And so rather than just going on the internet and kind of trying to piece it together, the app Technique Football is a guide for players who want to get better, whether whatever age or level they are. If they want to improve, it gives the guidance of what can you actually do. Take your ball, go out to the wall and do this, and this will make you better.
And I'm guessing during the last 18 months when, you know, kids across the world really haven't been able to go to, whether it's their schools, to their football teams, and not being able to go and play and socialize together, I'm guessing this must have been incredibly helpful for kids wherever they happen to be, because it's an app.
Yes, and a number of people, when things were shut down and players were isolated from their teams, started using the app, which was, I was very grateful that we already had it, and obviously not with the intention of players not being able to play with their teams. It's supposed to be supplemental to that. But it was really great to see the impact it could have on allowing players to still have the ideas and still connect to their teammates. There's an aspect of leaderboard, so you can see what your teammates are doing on there and have that little bit of social connection through the game without actually being able to play in person.
Yeah, so I think, as you say, the timing isn't really something that you could have planned for or legislated for, but hopefully it has helped a lot of players to be able to still do that. But I suppose that's great for players who want to use the app. I'm more interested in terms of the business side of how you kind of think it can grow, or potentially the journey that you've been on already. Can you give us a little bit more insight into that and how the ups and downs probably that you've faced so far?
Sure. So, you know, we talked a little bit about transitioning out of the game and how my illness actually helped me. Well, my business really helped me transition off the field, because what I realized, I knew this a little bit from the start, but I've realized it more and more, and I'm always reminded, is that I believe that being an entrepreneur is so similar to being a footballer or being any, I think striving in any field, because it was almost the same. It's such a parallel journey for me. I have this vision of what I want my business to be. I had this vision of who I wanted to be on the field. And then I had to break it down to literally, what do I do every day when I open my computer, go up at the field, what do I have to do every day to get closer to that vision? So for me, I'm very ambitious about the business. And I think, especially in the U.S., like we kind of talked about, players don't really know what to do. You know, there's a great culture of that in Europe. There's a natural culture of going out and playing pickup football, going out to the wall, kicking around. There's not really that culture here in the U.S. So I'm very ambitious about getting as many players as possible using this resource to develop that love and understanding of the game that elsewhere is a more natural thing. But that allowing myself to be ambitious about something else outside of myself as a player has been really, really helpful to me mentally. And I'm so grateful for my business, because it allowed me in these last few years to put my ambition into something else, which really helped me play with me.
I think that's something that I did as well whenever I was playing, Yael, that it was more to do with an identity thing, that I didn't want to be seen just as, you know, just a footballer. It was more to do with, okay, I do that for my job, so to speak, but I also wanted to go and study or learn a language or, you know, become a landlord, whatever it happens to be. But it was all these different things that I was doing. So I knew that my footballing days, the playing side, was going to come to an end at some stage. I was very fortunate to get to 32. You know, a lot of people don't even get past 30. So to get to 32, but when I had these different things going on, to then take the football aspect out of my life still left me with quite a number of things that I wanted to do. And that purpose is kind of what you're talking about. That business side has really helped you transition. And so I'm wondering then, if your ambition and scale for Techno Football, is it something you want to keep just to the US, or have you got, you know, kids and teams around the world doing it? And what kind of levels are the players who are using it? Are they college, professional, or somewhere in between?
Yeah, so we have players of all levels. We have some very young players, even six-year-olds, who use it and have kind of like, I wouldn't recommend it for a player that young because I don't think they should be really training seriously. But we have players who probably had a similar mindset to what I had, who are very young and more beginner, but they're focused enough to kind of go follow the program and train on their own, all the way up to, you know, professional players in their off-season, college players in their off-season, who use it as a resource to, you know, they're already usually by that point have good ideas and how to train if they need to do things on their own, but it adds a little bit of variety. They can follow and stay technically sharp, you know, in between all the other things they're doing. And you know, we do have international, we have players internationally using the app, some teams, We haven't put a ton of effort into marketing or really getting the word out internationally just yet, because I think there's so much of the US market that we still have not even touched. But certainly it's not, I have no specific plan, but I do think there is definitely a market internationally for it. But for the reason I said before, I think there's a little bit more of a need in the US, especially right now. So that's why I started to focus there.
Yeah, brilliant. And I'm so pleased for you that it's going so well. And actually just, you know, in terms of your entire career, as much as, you know, you've said you've had those ups and downs, and it's good just to, you know, peek behind the curtain and see the different sides of people who have been incredibly successful, just what it takes to go through that. And maybe you might have alluded to this. I've already possibly covered some of this, but one of my final questions for you, Yael, is looking back at your career, looking at the stuff you've done now, taking everything into account, has there been a price to your success?
Ooh, my health, I would say. And literally, I think that the stress and the mental health part of it manifested physically for me. So my health has suffered because of my ambition and my drive to keep pushing. And maybe when I should have slowed down, maybe when I should have relaxed a little more. And so that's something now that I'm looking to hopefully get back into balance. And my new ambition, I think, I would hope my family agrees with this, they're always the best judge, is a little bit more balanced, and I'm able to kind of give it its place in my life with everything else. But certainly as a footballer, that was everything. That took precedence. I picked up and moved when I had to. I went out and trained when I was tired. I did whatever I had to do, and it took a toll on me.
Yeah, and I think you've probably touched on my final question for you, Yael, because whenever you talk about what it had been, what you had gone through, and potentially how that might have manifested as a physical outcome for you with your illness. But the final question for you, as I asked you at the start, what is the definition of success? And now for you at this stage of your life going forward, what is your definition of success?
Oh, wow. I think I'm still in a little bit of a phase of trying to find that out, if I'm being totally honest. And part of that is because I had defined success one way in my playing career that I don't know if I necessarily agree with anymore. And it had to very much do with having that passion, having that drive, and making progress every day. And I think that success for me moving forward is a lot more passive. And it's a lot more about enjoying and being present daily. And if that means pushing forward and progressing, that's great. And if it means some days not, that's okay too. But to enjoy my days. And I think that's something that I put aside when I was striving for something as a footballer. I didn't have to enjoy it, but I had to make progress, and that felt good to me. Now I think the goal, success, is to enjoy my days, whatever that may change over the years.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time, Yael. That was really, really enjoyable.
Oh, thank you so much. I enjoyed the conversation too.
Well, I don't know if you are feeling shocked or not by some of the things that Yael shared with us during that last 60-minute chat, but I was blown away when someone who reach the pinnacle of their sport, become a professional footballer, represented their country, and yet admitted to us that she didn't enjoy it at all. And virtually every game before she played, she was racked with anxiety, almost led into a little bit of depression. I was so shocked listening to her answers and just could not believe it. And yet I also have to take my hat off to her, because someone who has been able to do that for 15 years in an environment that is incredibly difficult and challenging and still have the success that she's had, that just takes so much credit to her and also an amazing amount of willpower. Hopefully you enjoyed that. I know I absolutely loved that. That was so eloquent, the way Yael explained all aspects of her career and life. And I hope you can join us for another episode of The Psychology of Success. And a final thank you for everyone involved in making today's show. From producing it, we've got Moment Digital with Neil Stainsby and Peter Wright. Hayley Brasnett is the editor. Dave Webster has been our researcher, and Emily Drake helps get us out all of our social media posts on the psychology of success.